So if your pet is ever on the operating table, you naturally want the absolute best surgeon in the room, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, we look for compassion, stellar credentials, a veterinarian who really knows their craft. But what if the actual difference between a successful life-saving procedure and, well, a complete clinical disaster isn't just the person holding the scalpel?
Right, it's often something much smaller.
Yeah, like what if the real hero or the hidden villain is just a microscopic rubber seal on a machine that hasn't been checked in 6 months?
Welcome to this custom-tailored deep dives where we are going to explore exactly that.
It's a really fascinating topic.
It really is. We are pulling from a comprehensive guide published today, actually April 13th, 2026, by BOMAMED. They're a highly trusted Canadian veterinary equipment vendor that's been outfitting clinics since 1985.
That's a long time to learn the ins and outs of this stuff. Definitely. And the mission here is to completely shift how you look at the unseen systems of veterinary care. We're looking at why maintaining complex medical equipment isn't just some, janitorial chore where you lazily check boxes on a clipboard.
No, not at all.
It is the literal heartbeat of clinical reliability, patient safety, and even the financial survival of a practice. So, okay, let's unpack this.
To do it.
Treating equipment maintenance as an afterthought is, it's like never changing the oil in your car, but still expecting it to win the Indy 500 at top speed.
That is a brilliant way to put it.
Thanks. I mean, it's a fundamental mismatch between how we treat our tools and what we demand of them. So if you've ever dropped off your dog or cat for a procedure, you've probably wondered what actually keeps those blinking, beeping machines from failing exactly when they are needed most.
Well, what's fascinating here is that the failures we should be most terrified of rarely look like a Hollywood movie.
Right, like sparks flying everywhere.
Exactly. It's not a machine suddenly sparking, smoking, and just shutting down mid-surgery. The foundational theme of this BOMED guide is that without rigorous, disciplined maintenance, degradation is gradual.
Gradual, okay.
Yeah, and more importantly, it is entirely hidden from the naked eye. We are talking about microscopic calibration drifts.
What does that actually mean in practice?
It's a lot like a piano slowly going out of tune. It doesn't happen all at once. Every single day, one key drops a fraction of a semitone.
So you don't even notice it.
Right, the player doesn't notice the change day to day.
Yeah.
But then, a month later, the entire song sounds discordant and wrong. That's calibration drift.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, by the time a piece of medical equipment actually stops turning on, the clinic has likely already been operating with compromised data for weeks or even months.
That is a deeply unsettling reality, especially when you remember we are talking about life or death medical
It's
diagnostics.
very high stakes.
But okay, if the degradation is that slow and invisible, let me play devil's advocate for a second here. If I leave my car parked in the garage for a month, the tires don't wear out. So if a veterinary clinic barely uses a specific piece of equipment, they don't need to maintain it as much, right? Like, less physical use should equal less wear and tear.
It sounds perfectly logical, but the guide explicitly tears down that exact misconception.
Wait, really?
Yeah, it's highly counterintuitive.
No.
But if we connect this to the bigger picture of clinical operations, a clinic that has incredibly high usage of their equipment but maintains a militant maintenance discipline will actually drastically outperform a low-usage clinic with poor upkeep.
Huh. Because we tend to view turning something off as, putting it to rest. How does sitting still actually cause damage?
It comes down to a sort of mechanical atrophy.
Mechanical atrophy, like muscles.
Exactly like muscles. Complex medical devices are heavily engineered to be run. They require thermal cycling.
Right.
When they sit in a static state, the internal lubricants that keep moving parts frictionless begin to pool at the bottom of their casings.
Oh, I see. So the grease literally just drips away from where it needs to be.
Precisely. And the rubber O-rings and airtight seals, which require moisture and movement to stay pliable, they start to dry out and become brittle. Even batteries that aren't regularly discharged and recharged lose their cellular capacity. You're essentially letting the machine's joints get stiff.
So it's not just about the wear from a physical procedure, it's about the machine dying of neglect in the corner of the room.
Exactly. And you also have to factor in the ambient environment. The conditions within a veterinary clinic are constantly interacting with the hardware.
Like what? What's in the air?
Well, you have dust from the HVAC systems, pet dander everywhere, and constantly fluctuating humidity
I
levels.
suppose dust accumulating inside a ventilation grate doesn't magically stop just because the power switch is flipped off.
It definitely doesn't. If a machine is sitting idle in a room where humidity levels fluctuate, That moisture is constantly condensing on the internal microcircuitry. Yet over time, that causes microscopic corrosion on the motherboard. Airborne particles get into delicate sensors. So the strategy of preventive maintenance isn't just about cleaning up after a surgery.
It's more proactive than that.
Right. It is an active defense against the environment itself. Preventive maintenance replaces the chaotic, unpredictable, reactive repair cycle with scheduled inspections.
So you're finding the problem before it's a problem.
Exactly. You are actively looking for that slightly dried out seal or that minor corrosion before it escalates into a catastrophic failure.
Okay, so we've been talking about how time and the environment silently kill these machines. But let's look at the actual clinical application. The BOMIME guide gets deep into some of the most critical high stakes hardware in a practice.
Yes, specifically imaging and anesthesia.
Let's start with ultrasound equipment. To me, an ultrasound probe is basically like a professional photographer's high-end camera lens. You wouldn't toss a $5,000 piece of glass into a junk drawer.
You definitely shouldn't.
But how does an ultrasound actually fail? Because if it's not sparking and smoking, what is the mechanism of failure that hurts a patient?
The mechanism of failure with ultrasound is almost entirely about signal degradation, and it's heavily tied to the probe and the cable.
The cable. Just the wire.
Yeah, well, an ultrasound probe works by sending electrical pulses to highly sensitive piezoelectric crystals located at the tip of the wand. These crystals literally vibrate to send sound waves into the body.
Oh, cool.
And then they listen for the echoes bouncing back off internal organs.
So it's translating microscopic vibrations into a digital image on a screen.
Exactly. Now, to get those signals back and forth, the cable connecting the probe to the machine houses hundreds of microscopic individual coaxial wires.
Hundreds of them in that one cable.
Yes, and a major issue highlighted in the guide is cable strain. When staff wrap the cord too tightly around the machine or bend it at a sharp angle when putting it away, they're putting immense mechanical stress on those internal micro wires.
Oh, like when you wrap a laptop charger too tight for months and eventually just stops charging because the wire snapped inside the rubber casing.
It is the exact same physical principle, but the consequence isn't a dead battery.
What happens then?
If a few of those microwires snap inside an ultrasound cable, the machine doesn't shut down. Instead, those specific piezoelectric crystals at the end of the broken wires stop firing.
Oh, so part of the image is just gone.
Right. This creates microscopic dead zones or noise in the image. The image gradually gets fuzzier, or shadows appear where there shouldn't be any.
And the vet looking at the screen might mistake that technical shadow for a physical mass in the animal, or worse, miss a fluid buildup entirely because the resolution has silently degraded.
That is the direct line from how a technician wraps a cord on a Tuesday to a severe misdiagnosis on a Friday. The user rarely notices the image quality dropping because it happens so incrementally.
Which perfectly illustrates why waiting for something to visibly break is a terrible strategy.
Absolutely.
What about anesthesia machines? Because while an ultrasound gives you data, anesthesia is actively controlling an animal's consciousness and breathing. That's terrifying.
It is. Anesthesia delivery systems operate in the most high-risk clinical scenarios imaginable. The physics of anesthesia involve incredibly precise fluid dynamics and gas pressures.
And I'm guessing the danger is in those subtle deviations again.
Exactly. We're talking about a slight inaccuracy in the gas flow meter, a vaporizer output that is delivering a fraction of a percent too much isoflurane, or a microscopic leak in the corrugated breathing circuits.
Wait. Shouldn't modern anesthesia machines have digital fail-safes for this?
You would think so, right?
Yeah. If we have smart technology, why are we relying on humans doing physical hardware checks to find a leak? Why doesn't the machine just beep and say, hey, I'm leaking?
That is a fantastic question, and it gets to the heart of why physical maintenance can never be fully automated. Digital sensors are incredibly smart, but they only read the data that passes directly across their specific measurement points.
So they can miss things.
Exactly. If there is a micro leak in a breathing tube due to degraded rubber, or a physical flaw in the mechanical seal of the vaporizer, the digital sensor might register a slight drop in pressure.
But it doesn't know why.
Right. It cannot always distinguish whether that drop is due to a failing seal, a change in the animal's lung compliance, or just a loose valve. Furthermore, digital sensors themselves are subject to the calibration drift we talked about earlier.
Ah, so you can't rely on the sensor to tell you the machine is failing if the sensor itself is the thing that's failing.
Precisely. You have to verify the physical integrity of the hardware. A tiny, almost imperceptible flaw in a physical O-ring can drastically alter the exact concentration of anesthetic gas an animal receives.
And in veterinary medicine, where you might be anesthetizing like a 3-pound kitten, the margin for error is essentially zero.
It really is zero.
And obviously a kitten can't tell you they're feeling a little too awake or that their breathing feels restricted.
Right, which is why the Bulmite source emphasizes that you cannot rely on observation alone during a procedure. You have to rely on standardized proactive maintenance schedules.
What does that schedule look like for anesthesia?
Because the immediate life safety risk is so extreme, the guide dictates leak tests and vaporizer checks weekly or even daily.
Wow, daily?
Yeah, alongside deeper monthly and annual calibrations. You are essentially mathematically proving the physics of the machine are sound before you ever attach it to a living creature.
Okay, so we've covered the slow death of electronics by neglect and the subtle breakdown of complex machines through physical use. But let's look at the other end of the spectrum.
Which is?
What happens when the cause of degradation isn't dust or use or neglect, but actually cleaning the equipment too much? Because the guide brings up surgical instruments and dental tools, and there is a fascinating paradox here.
Ah, yes. The paradox of sterilization. It is one of the most interesting challenges in medical maintenance.
Why is that?
Well, to make a surgical tool safe to use inside a patient's body, you have to run it through an autoclave to kill any bacteria or pathogens.
Right, but an autoclave isn't just a dishwasher. How does it actually work, and why does that process destroy the very tools it's trying to clean?
An autoclave works by subjecting instruments to intense thermal and mechanical stress. It uses extreme heat, often upwards of 270 degrees Fahrenheit, combined with high-pressure steam.
That sounds intense.
It is. Surgical tools are typically made of high-grade stainless steel.
Hmm.
But when you expose metal to that extreme heat, the molecular structure of the steel rapidly expands.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then when the cycle ends and the tool cools down, the metal contracts.
So every time a scalpel or a pair of forceps goes into the autoclave, it's experiencing a microscopic earthquake. The metal is physically swelling and shrinking.
Exactly. It's called metallurgical fatigue.
Metallurgical fatigue.
Yeah. Over hundreds of cycles, this rapid expansion and contraction creates microscopic fissures in the metal. It degrades the integrity of the hinges on forceps.
So they get wobbly.
Right. And it causes the ultra-fine cutting edges of surgical scissors and dental scalers to become dull on a microscopic level.
That's wild.
The very process designed to make the tool medically safe is the exact process that is physically tearing it apart atom by atom.
That is an incredible tightrope to walk. You are constantly balancing biological hygiene against hardware destruction. But it's not just the heat and pressure, is it? The guide also heavily points the finger at human error.
Yes. The autoclave is a necessary evil, but improper handling by the staff is completely avoidable, and it is a massive accelerator of degradation.
What does improper handling actually mean in this context? Are people just like dropping expensive tools on the floor?
I mean, sometimes it is as simple as dropping them, yes, but more often it's about seemingly harmless habits. The guide refers to things like poor stacking on a tray.
Like piling things up.
Yeah, where a heavy retractor is just tossed on top of delicate ophthalmic scissors. Or a concept called forced articulation.
Forced articulation. That sounds like a fancy way of saying you're bending something that shouldn't bend.
That's exactly what it is. Imagine a pair of surgical clamps where the hinge has become slightly misaligned due to that thermal expansion we just talked about.
Okay.
A staff member picks it up, feels resistance, and just squeezes harder to force the hinge closed. That forced articulation introduces microscopic bends into the handles and the jaws.
Oh, no.
And during a delicate surgery, if a clamp doesn't occlude a blood vessel perfectly because the jaw has a half millimeter bend in it, the patient bleeds.
Which brings up a really crucial operational point from the Bulmite source. They stress that universal training is non-negotiable. It can't just be the head veterinarian or the specialized surgical technicians who understand this.
No, it has to be a complete ecosystem of handling.
An ecosystem.
Yeah. A piece of medical equipment interacts with multiple hands throughout a single day. The person who uses the tool with incredible precision in the operating room is rarely the same person who carries it to the sink, scrubs it, loads it into the autoclave, and reorganizes it in the surgical pack.
Right, that makes total sense.
If a junior assistant or a new hire doesn't understand the fragility of piezoelectric crystals in an ultrasound probe or how forced articulation destroys a hinge, the equipment will fail prematurely.
So everyone needs to be on the same page.
You cannot compartmentalize equipment care. Training has to be universal.
But you know, you can have the most highly trained staff in the world treating every tool like it's made of spun glass, but eventually you cannot out-train physics.
That is very true.
Heat, pressure, and daily friction will eventually wear things down to the point of failure. So how does a clinic know when it's finally time to pull the plug? When do you stop trying to repair an aging machine and just buy a new one?
That is the tipping point, and it's a decision that heavily impacts the financial survival of the practice.
Let me throw a hypothetical business scenario at you.
Go for it.
Let's say a clinic is rapidly expanding. They have more patients than they know what to do with. Revenue is through the roof. Can't they just out-earn their maintenance problems?
How do you mean?
Like, if a machine starts acting glitchy, just toss it and buy a new one since they have the cash flow. Why worry about life cycle management if you're rich?
It's tempting to think you can just buy your way out of operational friction. But this raises a fundamental misunderstanding of clinical scaling. The guide explains why rapid growth actually makes maintenance significantly more critical.
How does making more money make maintenance harder?
Because of throughput.
Mm.
When a clinic expands, throughput increases exponentially.
Oh, the patients.
Right. The machines are seeing more patients, running more cycles, and experiencing vastly more wear in a shorter time frame. If you just adopt a run-it-until-it-glitches mentality, you are guaranteeing operational disruption.
Because it's going to break down eventually.
You cannot schedule a sudden failure. If your primary ultrasound goes down on a busy Tuesday morning, you don't just lose the cost of the machine.
You lose the whole day.
You have to cancel appointments, you delay critical diagnoses, and you shatter patient trust.
Right, and it's not like you can just run down to the local big box electronics store and throw a clinical-grade veterinary ultrasound in your shopping cart.
Exactly. The supply chain for specialized medical hardware is very slow. These machines often require custom builds, complex shipping logistics, and specialized installation and calibration by certified technicians.
Oh, wow. I didn't think about the installation.
Yeah. It can take weeks to replace a high-end machine. Therefore, a high-revenue, high-throughput clinic actually requires stricter, more frequent maintenance scheduling to ensure that their most profitable tools never go offline unexpectedly.
So, barring a sudden catastrophic breakdown, what are the concrete mathematical indicators that tell a clinic management team, okay, repairs are no longer viable, it is officially time to replace this asset?
The source outlines several specific triggers. The first is a shrinking mean time between failures.
Meaning?
Essentially, an increasing frequency of repairs. If your technician is coming out to fix the same anesthesia vaporizer every other month, the risk profile is too high.
Makes sense.
Second is obsolescence. This isn't just about wanting the newest model. It's when the original manufacturer stops producing the replacement parts or stops updating the diagnostic software.
Ah.
If you can't source a proprietary O-ring, the machine is dead.
And I imagine there is a financial tipping point where the parts cost more than the machine is worth.
That is the third trigger. The crossover point where ongoing maintenance costs plus the lost revenue from downtime exceed the annualized cost of just buying a new unit.
That's just basic math at that point.
Right. But the ultimate indicator above all financial metrics is operational risk.
Operational risk.
When a critical system's reliability becomes even slightly uncertain, especially in high-stakes scenarios involving patient airways or anesthesia, it must be replaced immediately. You simply cannot gamble with the physics of a machine that is keeping an animal breathing.
That makes total logical sense. But keeping track of the meantime between failures, the software versions, the cost curves, how does a busy clinic actually track all of this without drowning in paperwork?
This brings us to what might be the true unsung hero of any medical practice.
Let me guess.
Documentation.
I knew it.
You have to maintain meticulous, centralized logs of every service date, every specific action performed, and the life cycle history of every single part.
That sounds exhausting.
It is. But the Bowman Guide is definitive on this point. Rigorous documentation is the only way a clinic can mathematically prove it is time to replace an asset rather than repair it.
It takes the emotion out of it.
Yes. It transforms subjective memory into actionable data. Without it, you are just guessing. And guessing leads to rushed, desperate purchasing decisions when a machine finally dies mid-procedure.
So we've really journeyed through the invisible life cycle of a veterinary clinic today. From the moment a machine is turned on, to the microscopic wear and tear of its daily use, to the very cleaning processes that slowly break it down.
We really have.
We've learned that equipment maintenance is an active, vital clinical operation. It's the physics of patient safety. we explored how preventive schedules stop the chaos of reactive repairs.
Mm.
We demystified how a tightly wrapped cord can literally snap the microwires that feed a piezoelectric ultrasound crystal, causing a misdiagnosis. We discussed the fluid dynamics of anesthesia seals, the thermal expansion inside an autoclave, and why a clinic to junior assistants hold just as much responsibility for equipment lifespan as the lead surgeon.
It's all connected.
It is. Whether you manage a business with expensive, complex hardware of your own, or you are just a pet owner who wants the best possible outcome for your animal, understanding these invisible systems completely changes how you view professional competence.
It really does.
It's not just about the empathy or the credentials of the person standing in the room. It's about the relentless, unseen discipline happening behind the scenes, mathematically ensuring every tool is operating flawlessly.
That invisible discipline really is the foundation of trust in any industry, but especially in medicine. The next time you take your pet to the vet for a routine procedure, look around at the monitors, the ultrasound wands, the surgical trays. The true hero in that room, the thing actively saving your pet's life, might just be the quiet, unglamorous logbook showing that someone diligently checked a vaporizer seal the week before.
Wow, yeah.
It makes you wonder, what are the vaporizer seals in your own life or business? What are the tiny hidden systems you rely on every day that you are completely forgetting to check?
That is a brilliant question to leave off on. We spend so much of our energy trying to win the race, we forget to look at the mechanics of the engine getting us there. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep asking questions, keep looking beneath the surface, and keep exploring the unseen protocols that keep our world running safely.